Welcome to Sports Community Radio, everyone. It's a fantastic Saturday morning. Welcome to you, Steve Pellis.
Hello, Joey. How are we going bright and early on the Saturday morning?
I am going very, very well. I hope all of you listeners out there are going very well. We've got a massive show for you today. We've got Peter Downs from the manager, I should say, of Play By The Rules, a website dedicated to informing grassroots sports clubs and all sporting bodies on how they can be better citizens in our community. We've also got our ever popular top nine tip segment, and today we're going to be talking about how to get your club into the local media, and we're also going to be covering the latest grants. Steve Pellis, anything else that I've missed?
Well, Joe, it's been a big week, hasn't it? No, I think that's pretty much the extent of our show this week, and the Play By The Rules, which does focus on making sport inclusive, safe, and fair.
You did have something very special happening this week. You presented to Cricket Victoria, am I right?
Yeah, we had the honour and the pleasure of talking grassroots sports to the community, the regional cricket managers. So we had 25 Cricket Victoria guys in the room. 16 of them were the regional managers that work with the clubs on a daily basis, and it was really, really refreshing, Joe, to talk with a peak sporting body that has a really strong understanding about what is happening at the grassroots level. Because sometimes we talk with peak sporting bodies, and the higher up the chain we get, there's a little bit of a disconnect between what they think is happening and what is actually happening at the grassroots level. But it was very refreshing and eye-opening discussion that we had for three and a half hours. So I enjoyed it.
Fantastic. Let's get stuck into the show. We're going to start off, as we traditionally do, with our latest grants. Steve, which grants have become available?
Yeah, this week, Joe, on the Sports Community website, there's five grants from around the country, and as we know, we've got listeners from around the country. There's five grants that have been opened in the last week. So we'll start with the Northern Territory, and we look forward to being up in the Territory in a couple of weeks. And do note that the temperature is about 20 degrees warmer than it is here in Melbourne at the moment. But the Northern Territory Sports Voucher Scheme has now opened, so clubs can apply to the Territory for school-age kids. Every school-age child that they enrol within their club, they can receive a voucher up to $75 to help cover the costs of playing organised sports. So if you're a sports club in the Northern Territory, then that's something that you're obviously well aware of and really using to good advantage. A great initiative from the Territory government, and hopefully other states and territories around the country do look to bring that in. A slightly different grant that's open is a non-government grant. It's the Cadbury Fundraising Community Grants. This one closes on the 28th of November, so there's a fair bit of time now for clubs to make an application to Cadbury, and we're talking Cadbury, the chocolate provider. The grants program is intended to support a wide range of community-based projects that increase social inclusion and enhance the community engagement. So that's very, very broad, and I think just about every club, if they tried, could create a project where they were able to take advantage of that grant. As I said, that one closes on the 28th of November, so there's plenty of time. And I'm just flicking back to the website here, Joe. The next one's a grant for Western Australian clubs, and it's just opened, and it's called the Athlete Travel Subsidy Scheme. So it's for Western Australian regional athletes, helping them to offset the costs of travelling to state and national competitions. So they'll fund the out-of-pocket expenses for travel and accommodation from between $150 to $2,300 on a case-by-case basis. So that one's that's pretty cool if you're an athlete of any age living in regional Western Australia wanting to get to state or national competition. And I guess the final grant that we wanted to let everyone know about is the Endeavour Foundation Endowment Challenge Fund. Now, this unfortunately is only open to two clubs and not-for-profit organisations in Queensland and New South Wales. But what it does is there's a total pool of $20,000 that can be distributed to successful applicants that are looking to have projects that directly include people with disabilities and especially those with intellectual disabilities within their club and their programs. So if you're looking to raise funds for those type of projects that are looking to increase participation or make it easier for existing members within your club with a disability, then the Endowment Challenge Fund is a great place to start. So that closes on the 9th of May, Joe. So we've got lots of time there as well. They're just the four grants that we've found that have opened this week on the website. But the sports community website has over 60 grants available from around the country and from different philanthropic trusts that are providing sport to... providing funds to local sports clubs. So if you go to the website, www.sportscommunity.com.au, click on the grants tab and you will see 60-odd grants that your club can apply for, Joe.
You're with Joe and Steve on Sports Community Radio, part of the Sports Community Digital Group, hosted on RPPFM, the voice of the peninsula. Check us out at www.sportscommunity.com.au. Very special guest with us today. His name is Peter Downs. He is the manager of Play By The Rules. Welcome to the show, Peter.
Hi, Joe. How are you?
Very well, thanks.
Hi, Peter. Steve Pellis. How are you going?
I'm good. Good, Steve. How are you?
Oh, very, very, very well. Thank you very much. Peter, we're so grateful for you to come onto the show because we're very keen for you to talk about the website the service that which you're a very big part of, which is Play By The Rules. We do a lot of training around the country and we introduce it in every single training session and not a lot of people really know what the Play By The Rules website is. So can you just give us a little bit of the background to it and what the site is and what you're trying to achieve, which what you do really well achieve with the website?
Yeah, sure. Well, Play By The Rules really started over a decade ago. Now, it emanated out of South Australia with the Equal Opportunity Commission and the Department of Sport and Recreation down in South Australia, who saw really there were emerging issues at that time around child protection, around harassment, discrimination type issues, and they essentially wanted to do something about it. Could have quite a long story short, Play By The Rules was born, and over the years evolved through a partnership from nowadays 18 different organisations, including all state departments of sport and recreation, Equal Opportunity Commission, the Australian New Zealand Sports Law Association, Australian Sports Commission, Human Rights Commission, Office of Children's Guardian. So it's a real broad collective of agencies who are part of supporting Play By The Rules, which essentially is now around safe, fair and inclusive sport. So its original remit around child protection, harassment and discrimination are still very much a part of the core of Play By The Rules. But nowadays, we are in other different areas around inclusion of disadvantaged populations, issues around homophobia and racism, around even supplements and illicit drug use as well is coming into our remit now as well. So much broader than the original days, but essentially the core of it is around those sort of child protection, harassment, discrimination type issues.
Yeah, fantastic. I mean, we absolutely love the website and the information that you've got on the website. Peter, if I'm a club volunteer or a president or a secretary, when am I most likely to use your website?
I think we did a bit of a profile, if you like, of the average user of Play By The Rules website. Typically, people come with an issue. We have actually a section called Got An Issue, and that's one of the most popular tabs, if you like, on the site. Now, they may be dealing with issue of someone's raised a complaint or has an issue around harassment or discrimination, or it could be bullying. A vast range of issues get raised, and they come looking for some kind of support in that area. Yeah. So the Got An Issue tab is really extremely popular there. inside there, they've got access to a whole bunch of things, including club toolkits with templates and codes of behaviour, interactive scenarios, and access to online courses around various issues as well. So they come with a particular context, their own context in mind,
yep.
looking for some kind of support in that area. And usually, hopefully, they can find it through by road rules.
Oh, absolutely. They can for sure, no matter what the issue is to do with human behaviour. In our training, we actually try and teach the clubs to use it slightly differently in that we try and educate the clubs about the information that you've got on the website and get them to incorporate those policies and procedures and behaviours into their club culture so that inevitably or hopefully that they don't have an issue. And that seems to be a really big eye opener for some clubs. But and we'll just ignore the beeping of the phone call trying to come through on the other line. So that's our limited technology in our community radio station. But you mentioned bullying and harassment. Can you just give us a couple of examples of each that you've found common within the clubs, and what clubs can do about A, minimising it, and B, addressing those situations when they do occur, unfortunately, sometimes inevitably?
Sure, yeah. I often get questions similar to that around what are the new issues or emerging issues. Well, I don't think necessarily too many new issues. It's the issues around, say, bullying and what they call ugly parent
yes.
syndrome and things like that
yep.
still exist.
Yeah, absolutely.
Fortunately, they're still there, very much, very much so. And quite often... the sort of typical, if there is such a thing as a typical issue, is around, when I say ugly parents, is around the behaviour of people, spectators, parents, supporters
yes.
of sport, rather than people involved in the planning of sport.
Yes.
Which is quite funny when you think about it in that kind of way. What we would hope that Play By The Rule is able to assist with in that kind of situation, say there's been an incident in a local club, is that through the kind of resources and information available through the site, it gives people that extra bit of confidence and assurity that they can that they know how to deal with it. It's raising that level of discussion and understanding that it doesn't have to be as hard as it seems at first. Sport's a great thing, of course, but we all love it, but it's very emotional. So at the heat of battle kind of thing,
yeah.
it can be very easy to things get out of control. What we hope is to increase people's confidence to be able to say, okay, we have a procedure, we have a code, we have a protection policy. Let's go and have a revise, make sure we know and understand the basics of that and follow that policy through. And that should give guidelines to help cope with these sorts of situations. At the time, it's really, essentially about trying to give people the confidence and capacity to deal with those sorts of things that inevitably will happen. It's not going to go away.
Yeah, yeah. And when we're talking with volunteers, it's almost the fine print about going onto the committee, because no one ever actively points out to you that you're now responsible for the behaviour of all your players, all your spectators, yes. all your members. And often the first time that a president, a new president or a new committee has to face that, it becomes very daunting and very, very challenging. And the resources you've got on the website are absolutely fantastic from that perspective.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. Well, what we'd hope, I'd add to that, Steve, what we'd really hope that they're not just bits of paper. And that's always a challenge for any website, for any resource,
yes.
really, that it becomes a kind of part of the culture, that it is discussed regularly, it is reviewed regularly,
yep.
it raises that level of consciousness about, so we at least have a confidence that if an instance do occur, then we kind of know the process, we know what we're supposed to do in this situation.
Yeah.
And that's always a challenge, I don't say we get 100% right every time, for sure. But the challenge is to make that a reality. Some of the online courses that people undertake around child protection, harassment, discrimination, they're the real meat,
yes.
if you like, behind the bones of Play By The Rules, because they are quite comprehensive.
Well, take us through those courses and A, what the courses entail, because, yeah, they're absolutely fantastic
again, I sound like I'm your biggest fan, but I guess the reality is we are. You the role that you play in local sport or in sport in general is absolutely outstanding for the rank and file volunteer like ourselves. But those training sessions in particular is where someone can actually delve a lot deeper into a given topic and explore in depth, or the training sessions take you in depth into those topics and how to deal with them. So take us through what the topics are and again, who is looking at those training courses, because it's not just the professional sports administrators, is it?
No. It's our profile, again, is the volunteer. The club administrators are very typical, but also volunteers, club officials who are in volunteer capacities. We probably get about 1,400 people a month going through those courses and enrolling on them, and about 2/3 of that complete within the month. The online courses are around child protection, harassment, discrimination, and complaint handling. These days, online courses are far more advanced than a few years ago when you click from one scene to the next. There's a lot of interactive features and quizzes, interactive scenarios, information that you can drill down to, for example, in the legal implications for each particular state around working with children checks and those sorts of things. So as you more you drill into it, the more you can unearth information that's relevant to your particular jurisdiction. There are interactive scenarios, a lot of video content in there, role plays around issues, for example, the conflict of interest, which is always an interesting one.
Yeah.
For people in clubland in particular, because everyone's got a conflict of interest of some sort.
Pretty much, yeah.
So it's a tricky one, but there's some interactive scenarios around that. As they work through the course, say, for example, typically it's probably 5 or 6 hours worth of work to get through. You have to go through, you can't finish it with a certificate until you've gone through every single page, clicked on everything that's in there. And there's a quiz at the end where you have to get through about 80% of that to be able to get your certificate as well. So it's quite comprehensive. And trust me, there's been a lot of work gone into developing those and a lot of input from people around the country into that sort of content. So, you know, that's which we highly promote, and we highly recommend people with an interest, not necessarily direct involvement, but even with an interest in those areas, particularly around complaint handling as well.
Yes.
Get involved and check out those courses. They're free online. And we're about to revamp the sort of registration and back-end process of that to make it much more simpler for people to access. But you can access those straight through the homepage of Playwild Rules anyway.
Yeah. Fantastic. Joe, you've got a question?
Yeah, Pete, I just wonder, you've got a lot of networks here. You can see in the literature that you put out that you partner with a lot of different state sporting, federal sporting and local sporting bodies. I'm just interested, what mechanisms do you use to promote yourselves? Because not every sport knows about Play By The Rules. So how do you go about promoting yourselves?
Yeah, we're not great at promoting ourselves because we're sort of too busy with content kind of thing. But we do run quite large media campaigns on particular issues each year, which goes a lot to promoting awareness of Play By The Rules. We have over 2,000 links back from sporting organisations coming back to Play By The Rules. But a lot of national sports organisations, for example, have links back and advertise and promote Play By The Rules as key partners. We're also part of this Fox Sport network that gets Play By The Rules out to grassroots sport, around 30,000 clubs who use that network, and the websites from Fox Sport Pulse as well. The media campaign last year, people may have seen the Racism It Stops With Me campaign featuring Adam Goods, which occurred at the kind of Adam Goods incident. It was kind of fortuitous in a way for it there. And this year it's called You Can Play, which is around issues of homophobia in sport, which we're just completing right now, which will be a national TV and radio campaign as well, which will feature people like we filmed Lauren Jackson yesterday, and Mitchell Johnson we're filming today. Alexander Del Piero was great, Harry Kuehl, Libby Trickett, and Dave Pocock, etc. So some quite high-profile sports stars, but talking about the issues of homophobia in sport. as well, and that will go out on TV and radio networks sort of mid-April time.
Cool. You mentioned earlier on, Peter, that one thing that's coming into your radar, for want of better terminology, is drugs in sport. And we're hearing anecdotal evidence, but pretty strong anecdotal evidence at the grassroots level, that the use of supplements and perceived performance enhancing drugs is increasing as the awareness of the high profile cases in professional sports has increased, and that's causing a lot of concern at the president's level and the committee level, because they just don't know what to do. But what angle is Play By The Rules taking with the whole drugs in sport issue?
Yeah, well, it's a little bit to be determined, Horace, but you're right. You know, that's the whole drive, really, from our partners. I've recognised there's been the Kline Commission report, there's been various other evidence that these issues are seeping through to grassroots of sport. And we've seen that in Australia. They've certainly seen it overseas.
Yeah.
As well, in the UK especially. I think really, you know, as we play a role in other areas of child protection, harassment, discrimination, raising awareness, producing online education and training around that, it would be no different in our approach really to that illicit sport and supplement use, for example, issue as well. So, you know, we determine exactly how we're doing to do that, but it is an emerging issue, and we have to sort of stay on top of it as best we can. And it's best to start early, obviously, with these sorts of issues. But I think if we can raise that level of awareness, help to raise the level of awareness about uses, for example, of supplements in sporting codes at the grassroots level, in particular, and to say, well, really, you're really better off eating well. You're better off having a banana.
Yeah.
You're better off, you know, looking after your health in those ways, since we don't know what's in a lot of supplements and that sort of grooming effect of having young people taking supplements on the idea that it improves performance is really, you know, it's a very interesting issue to try and deal with. So we'll be going at it from you know, angle. We go other issues in terms of education, training,
yep,
and trying to raise some awareness through media campaigns, etc.
Yeah, I must admit, I really do look forward to seeing how you do tackle that one, because when you come at it from the president's point of view or the committee point of view that are seeing this within the club, or seeing the usage within the club, they actually don't know how to tackle it themselves. So it just becomes another behavioural issue that they need to tackle. But this one has the capacity to be even more divisive or confrontational than a lot of others, because it, in some cases it's not illegal, and it's it's creating some real angst out there at the committee level, particularly for those that we're talking to. So we'll be watching very closely, and by all, we absolutely think you guys are the most qualified in Australia to really start to deal with those that tricky issue that is now relatively new within the rank and file sporting club.
Yeah, well, you touch on a very good point, I think, as the danger of becoming ingrained as part of club culture.
Yes.
And, you know, these sort of myths, there's a lot of myths around these issues out there, and the longer it goes, the more embedded it becomes in the culture. And that's quite a dangerous thing, really, when you think about it, that if it becomes ingrained in culture, it's harder to change.
Oh, absolutely.
Harder to stop those myths. So I'm sure, Steve, you've seen lots of this, the sort of myths and stereotypes and cultures that build over time. If you can get in earlier, if you can start to raise awareness and dispel some of those myths and challenge people on some of these ideas, then you have a chance then at least to stop its growth and to get back to some kind of reality, I guess.
Yeah. Now, let's come back right to reality. Now, you're working very closely with some organisations, and I'll just pick the first one that I think is a fascinating program that you're working with Football Federation Victoria on. Can you take us through that? Because I think that's brilliant.
Yeah. We get involved with some very interesting projects. This one is around racial vilification focus, around bystander intervention.
Yes.
And by that I mean people who are not perpetrators or victims of racial vilification. It's the others who are around that vicinity, the spectators and the other players, the other coaches and officials who are not directly involved. What happens in that situation where something's heard in that situation? What, beyond formal reporting, some people will always report an incident, which is good, and there are processes in place for that reporting, but the vast majority of time people will not report. They might be disgusted what they hear. They might be angered by what they hear.
Yes.
But they don't necessarily do much about it.
Yes.
So the bystander intervention program is trying to address that and say, what can people really do if they hear something, they see something, for example, if they see or hear some racial abuse from someone else in the crowd, what do they do about it other than formally report? Formally report is an option. A lot of people will be afraid of that for various reasons.
Yes.
Pretty obvious that they don't want to formally report it, but they think that's not really good. We should, that shouldn't happen in sport. So the bystander intervention are looking at all sorts of ways of identifying, ease of identifying people to tell, to talk to, ways to not report, but at least to tell, inform the club of what they'd heard. In the UK, they have something they use over an app, an iPhone app, a smartphone app. They can do anonymously, they will report incidents they find directly to the club. So over time, the club builds up a kind of profile of saying, we've got an issue at this club. We've had X number of reports around these issues occurring. We have an ongoing issue,
yeah.
Even though we don't get many formal reports. FFV have noticed, you know, they have a very good setup, the Football Federation of Victoria. They have a good process for formal reporting, and they do get reports. But they know there's far more. There's much more that happens locally that's never reported. And yep. Of course, they want to tackle that quite clearly. They want to tackle that, and so they're looking at ways to assist bystanders to intervene and do something about their situation.
Well, and that's going right down to the grassroots level.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. It's a big challenge. You can imagine it's a challenge.
Oh.
You know. It's going to be a challenge, but more's the point to address it, really, to say, well, if we know these occur. We've got to give people means to inform so that clubs becomes aware of these issues and can start to do something about it.
Yeah.
Peter, Joe here. You partner with a lot of national, state and local sporting bodies, also with the clubs. Now, if we're in club land and a club wants to engage with Play By The Rules by using some of the templates and the posters and whatnot, do you advise them to engage with you directly or go through their FFV or their state sporting body? What's the best way for them to do that?
I'd say the best way would be directly, to go directly to the site, to get in contact with us if they can't find what they're after, and come directly through Play By The Rules. Quite often with our partners, particularly in the sports sector, it's quite easy to do that through the websites and contacts of the sport, who are usually, you know, so we say have over 2,000 links back to Play By The Rules, but go straight to playbytherules.net.au. And have a look around, see what suits there, if not, get in touch. Because of our networks, we also know of things happening that are not directly involved with Play By The Rules, but are really good programs and initiatives, such as the SFB one we just talked about, for example. And there's numerous others around that as well. So we have very good networks in this whole area of safe, fair and inclusive sport. So the best way is contact us directly.
Yeah, absolutely. Another initiative that I was fascinated to learn about just recently was the Seven Pillars program that you're pulling together, Peter. Can you just run us through that one?
Yeah, I love this. This one is a very interesting project. Some while ago, we wanted to Play By The Rules to have a look more broadly at issues of inclusion of disadvantaged populations in the sport. So rather than go down the traditional route, if you like, of looking at particular targeting populations, say people with disability,
yep.
Indigenous, people from culturally and linguistically diverse backgrounds, etc. There are some excellent work being done in those areas. We wanted to look at the commonalities of inclusion that go across those areas. So what are the common issues that deal with inclusion of Indigenous populations or people with disability or people from different cultures? What are common areas of inclusion and can we articulate those in a way so that people can identify with them very early, Pete, can get a broad picture of inclusion and where they sit in their strengths and weaknesses across the broad issue of inclusion, and then drill down afterwards. Now, we partner with Swimming Australia. They do some excellent work in this area, as are gymnastics and netball, for example.
Yes.
To look at, can we develop a tool that does exactly what I tried to explain there, and it helps people to organisations to identify where their strengths and weaknesses are across seven pillars of inclusion that are common across the board. So, for example, let's take one of them. Attitudes is the second pillar that we look at. Attitudes to inclusion of people with disability, people from cultural, linguistic, diverse backgrounds, Indigenous, attitudes are absolutely fundamental to how inclusion can work in that sport.
Yeah.
It's common across all those areas. Sure, there are some very specific differences when you look at each particular targeted population, but generally, attitudes are very important. Now, if you ask any group of people, and I've done this lots of times, are you positive towards inclusion of different groups into your sport? Just about everybody will say yes.
Yeah.
You know, which is great. It's good to be positive in that way. But the question is, why are attitudes then still cited as the biggest issue when it comes to inclusion? I think it's because there's a difference between having a positive intention and actually changing behaviour and knowing how to change behaviour.
Yeah.
There's a big difference there. So people may be well-intentioned and say, yeah, of course we're inclusive. Yes, of course we welcome different cultures into our sport. But they don't necessarily know the habits they got into that actually don't encourage that, really.
Yep.
It's just part of what they do. So for sometimes you need to change some things and look at how we change the way we approach, how we change development of policy, how do we change our recruitment, how do we change our marketing and our promotion to different population groups.
Yes.
All those things. They just don't know kind of how to do that, even though they're very positive towards the notion of it. They kind of need some assistance to actually do it.
Absolutely. What are the, just briefly then, what are the six other pillars then that you've got in that program?
Well, the first one is access.
Yep.
Which deals more, not so much with physical access. It deals more with welcoming environments.
Yep.
How do you create, we've talked about it for years in the sports sector, yep, but how do you really create a welcoming environment for someone who's coming to the sport for the first time? So there's access issues there. So what are the habits you get into in creating those welcoming environments? Attitudes,
yes,
we just talked about, is part of that. Choices is the third pillar. So when it comes to choices, if you look at sport these days, there are multiple different choices between male, female, age choices, competition, non-competitive choices. There are, in fact, lots when you look at it on the face. But sport will never, you know, it will never cater for the huge diversity of human life that we have now in Australia.
Mm.
So there are groups who don't have choices when they come to a sport. So choices really challenges that idea to say, what kind of choices do you offer people from different cultures whose English is a second language, or people with disability who find access really difficult into your type of sport? So we challenge people around the choices that they offer. Partnerships is another one.
Yes. That
inclusion can't happen alone.
Yes.
It has to be partnerships with local other community groups and new ones that haven't been explored before as well. So the notion of developing new partnerships to encourage community inclusion is really important and a central pillar. Communication. It's good, again, to have supportive of inclusion, but you've got to communicate it.
Yes.
Internally and externally. So one of the key questions here is, does your club association reflect the community that it's in? You know, that's quite often that, well, sometimes that's not the case.
No.
It doesn't really reflect. It reflects the history of the club.
Mm.
It affects probably a healthy club, but it doesn't necessarily affect the modern community
yeah,
that surrounds it.
Well, that's our experience as well in the training. We ask that very question in the training, and very rarely do we get a club.
It's a great question to ask, isn't it? It's a good question to...
Thought-provoking question, actually.
Yeah.
I think the netballers call it the mirror test. Look into the mirror and see if you're reflecting your community.
Yeah.
So it's a very good way of looking at it, I think.
Yeah, it is. It is, and it's communication about how you communicate to your community is really important. You know, does that give that welcoming environment? Does that attract people in the modern community to your sport? So communication is a central pillar.
Yep.
Policy as well. Policy does. It, you know, it can be seen as a bit boring policy, but policy gives responsibility.
Yes.
And so with policy, it says, well, we have a public commitment. We have an organisation towards inclusion, and we have a policy around inclusion that sets out our strategic aims and our objectives and how we go about things. Our day-to-day work is governed by the policy. So policy gives people responsibility to make it happen there, and it's important to do that as well. And finally, opportunities. Opportunities is, we try that a little bit differently to the pillar of choice. The opportunity is the detail that makes that choice happen. So, for example, if a person with a disability comes for the first time to a sport, there may need to be some changes, maybe some adaptations of equipment or teaching style or environments or rules and regulations to help the inclusion of that person into that particular sport, that particular area. And that's the detail that makes the choice happen. So the opportunity is really given. You may have that choice, but not really the opportunity to participate fully in that activity. And that's where the detail of choice comes out, really, in the opportunity. So those are the seven. I think I've got the seven there.
Yep,
those are the seven. Those are the seven pillars. That the central approach to that is looking at the habits that clubs get into.
Yeah.
Over time. So, well, these are some of the common habits that maybe you've got into that is possible to change. The good thing about that approach is it is possible to change it, to change those kind of habits to become more inclusive. It's not that people don't intend and not positive towards it. They are. But really looking at the habits they got into that perhaps really exclude people from those environments is really important.
Okay, that's great. Thanks, Pete. For the listeners out there, if you want to contact Play By The Rules, you can email them at admin@playbytherules.net.au. The website is Play By The Rules, www.playbytherules.net.au. You can also find them on Facebook and YouTube and Twitter. Peter Downs, manager of Play By The Rules, a very big thank you from the sports community. We are very appreciative of your time and your insights into the world of grassroots and community sport. Thanks very much.
Great. Thanks, guys. Thanks very much. Keep up the good work.
Thanks, Peter. Thank you very much.
Thanks, guys.
Celebrate our Indigenous heritage at the inaugural Barn to Wananagi Water to Water Festival. Saturday, 29th of March, at the glorious Briars Park in Mount Martha. Highlights include Archie Roach, performers from the Torres Strait to Arnhem Land to the Mornington Peninsula, children's activities, Butch Tucker and more. Saturday, the 29th of March, the Briars, Mount Martha. Tickets and more info available at watertowater.org.au.
A station sponsor.
No matter what the news.
Heard an almighty bang.
It hit so fast.
The ground was shaking.
Local.
People running up and down screaming.
There was grass everywhere.
I can't believe this is happening.
National.
Australia's drought is over.
He is now the Wizard of Oz.
International.
There it is. A fantastic game.
Are we ready?
Magnificent.
It was a dream come true.
Hear it all on RPFM.
Dreaming of a place which is abundant with fresh fruits, herbs and vegetables, cheeses, seafood, bread, cakes and many other regional delicacies? Well, stop dreaming, as the Farmers Market in Mornington has all that and a whole lot more. Enjoy freshly made coffee and ready-to-eat food in an environment which the kids will love. Open every second Saturday of every month from 8:30 a.m. to 1 p.m. $2 per adult. Children are free. The Farmers Market Mornington, our station sponsor.
Peninsula Skin Cancer Centre has two centrally located clinics in Mornington and now in Frankston. They not only have state-of-the-art facilities, but also a great team of specialists with great skill in surgical technique and non-invasive skin cancer treatment. See for yourself at their new centre, 375 Nepean Highway, Frankston. Inquiries call 5975-9544. The Peninsula Skin Cancer Centre's a station sponsor.
More and more people with a taste for quality are shopping at Eliza Meats. Kevin and his lean team pride themselves on the finest cuts. from juicy steaks and roasts to high-grade mince and sausages. And Eliza Meats are the gourmet specialists. Inquire about Eliza Meats Spit Hire. Phone 9787 4473 for a mouth-watering meal fit for a king. It's all at Eliza Meats. See our sponsor Kevin at Eliza Meats, 112B Mount Eliza Way, a station sponsor.
This is Sally from Sweet Pea Cuisine. At Sweet Pea Cuisine, we specialise in sharing knowledge, passion and enjoyment around food. We run cooking classes for kids, teens and adults, present food events and cooking demonstrations, create recipes to highlight your product and style food for the camera. Join me every Tuesday morning on the breakfast program when I chat about all things food on the peninsula. To find out more, visit me at www.sweetpeacuisine.com.au and like my Facebook page, Sweet Pea Cuisine. Stay sweet with Sweet Pea Cuisine, a station sponsor.
Rightio, you're back with Joe and Steve. We're going to get right into our very popular top nine session here, where we divulge the top nine tips on subjects close to every grassroots sports club. And this week's is how to get your club into the local media. So, Steve, you're the expert in this area. We're gonna tell the listeners how they can engage the local media, and we're gonna give them the top nine tips. And number one is going to be
number one. Joe is, and it sounds logical and common sense, but you need to form relationships with those in the local media. So, first of all, we need to, and when we're talking local media, Joe, we're talking local newspapers, local radio stations, and local TV stations, whether they're the community stations or the TV stations in your area.
Yep, and the reason why we're very interested in telling the listeners about this is because there's not many clubs out there that take advantage of local media, is there?
No.
I mean, in our experience, most clubs, when they're marketing and promoting their services and their club, they're restricted to their club website, or they might use word of mouth, bit of signage, some banners, work with local schools, but very rarely do clubs go outside of that sphere and engage the media, and it's not that hard.
No, it's not that hard, and then generally the only time the clubs do is when they've got something big on, or they've got a major event or a major milestone coming up, and I guess then that's the first time that the committee will go to the media, and that's very difficult. So our first tip, Joe, is to make a conscious decision that you want to be actively in the media. And the first stage to that is to build relationships both with the reporters but also with the station managers and the editors, whether it's newspapers. So how do you do that? Bring them to your club. Invite them to your club. They won't come all the time, but have it as a long-term strategy so that you build those relationships. They get to know your club. They get to know the story about your club, what your club stands for, the culture of your club, and they get them to fall in love with their club. And then they'll kind of, you'll be front of mind when they're looking for stories, or when they see your story come across the desk, or your media release, which is another point coming up, that they know what context to put it in. So build those relationships with those local reporters.
How do you get those contacts? Well, when you read your local paper, most of the stories in the local paper will have the name of the reporter that has written it. They'll also have contact area in the paper for the contact of the editor. Local radio is the same thing. Just visit the website and you'll find contact numbers there. And most people that you email or call will call you back, so don't be afraid to do it. Number two, what's the second tip?
Invite them to your club. Even if you create an event that's tailored slightly to the media. So have a season launch. Have a if it's a first home game. If there's a major milestone. If there's a major fundraising event, actually create some opportunities for the media to come and cover that event. But you don't just want them to walk in the door, take the photo, and get their quote and walk away. You want them to come and to stay and to learn about the club. And I guess the easiest way to get the media, Joe, is point number three. And there's something that all club committees need to know and understand, and maybe use to their advantage a little bit. All councillors and all mayors love being in the media. The media love to have them in the media, have them in their pages, in their stories. So bring the two together. Invite the mayor, invite your councillor to your club, invite the media, tell each other that they're coming. They'll both come. If you say that the media's coming, even if they're not, the mayor will be there. Then you tell the media that the mayor's coming and there's a great photo opportunity. The media will come. You know, they're like birds of a feather. They flock together. So if you're struggling to get the media to your club, get your local councillor, get your state member, your territory member, your federal member to the club, create a photo opportunity for them, and then, and if you can get kids and animals in there as well, Joe, that that's a great thing from a media perspective, and they will come.
I love your next tip here, Steve. Number four, create your media list. This is absolute gold on a page of gold, my friend. What do you mean by this?
Well, when clubs decide that they want to get their story into the media, they don't know where to go. They don't know who to contact. And most importantly, they don't know when the cutoff is. So if you're a local newspaper, when's the deadline to get it into the next week's edition? So we recommend to clubs when they're at the start of the year to make a list of all the local media outlets. And local media today, Joe, is just, it is more than radio, television and newspaper. It's also blogs and forums that are covering your local sport, and lots of local sports are very heavily covered by what we would call unofficial digital media. So the bloggers and the forum owners and those sorts of conversations that are happening online. So include those in your list of media outlets. List who the person is, so who the sports reporter is at each newspaper, who the net editor is at each newspaper, who the sports reporter is at the TV station, and when their cutoff is, so generally on a Sunday night for local newspaper and 3 o'clock in the afternoon to get onto the news on that night and those sorts of things. So understand that, and then when you do want to produce your media release or invite the media to your club, then it's not that big job. But it is a big job to collect that list, and it takes a bit of time to maintain that list over the year, Joe, because there is a bit of turnover in the old sports reporters.
But it'd be absolute gold to have a list like that, because it gives you the avenues for which to push your content out, and I can't think of anything that would be more valuable than having a media list, and except maybe for the next item on your top nine, which is just one valuable thing after another.
Well, this is more picking up from your side of it. You're a very big believer in the value of storytelling, and for us, when you're trying to get into the local newspaper, the key is to be consistently producing, and if you're really going to be serious about it, on a weekly basis, producing a media release that tells the story of what's happening in your club that week. So, but don't just focus on the results. Focus on the things that are happening off the field as well. But a very, very good media release, Joe, is not just here's the results and here's the story, but it includes a quote from people. So you might have a young kid playing his 100th game at the club for his career, or 200th game. Have a quote from the kid, have a quote from the parent, have a quote from the president, and if you can, have a photo. So really put yourself in the chair of the journalist who's got to fill his newspaper every week with stories. You've got two choices. You've got this story that's come across his desk, which is a great story about a kid who's played his or her 200th game, and they're only 8 or 9 or 10, whatever. You've got quotes from the parents and the president and the kid themselves, and you've got a photo. Or the alternative is to go out, hit the beat, and go and find your own news story. You know, they're going to, if it's easy for the reporter, they're more likely to put it in. But remember that they're not going to put a story in, or generally they won't put a story in about your club every week. So don't get disheartened by that. Keep putting it out consistently on a weekly basis, and in time they may start to just.
I think that's a really key point. The local media outlets aren't going to put. Use your content every week. And I've seen plenty of club officials get disappointed with that and just give up the ghost. But you should actually do the complete opposite and redouble your efforts. And you'll find that the more that you put into sending them content, the more that it will appear. But it just won't appear every week.
Not necessarily. And the more that you're sending the content, the reporters and the editors are learning about your club. I mean, every now and then you can ring them and say, hey, what different do we need to do to get it in there, or thanks for putting it in there, or whatever it is, which is all building your relationship. Hey, we've got this event coming up in a couple of weeks that you might like to cover. So at the end of the day, Joe, it's really about relationships still. And the other thing is it's about the story.
Absolutely.
You know, if it's a story that is of interest to the community, then it's a lot more likely to get put into the paper or the radio or television show, which is point number six, or our tip number six, Joe. Don't just focus on the sports stories. The sporting clubs do so much within the community they're just fantastic community stories. So tell those sort of stories that don't just get in the back of the newspaper in the sports pages, Joe. Tell those stories that belong in the front of the newspaper. What's your club doing with the community, or people it's including within its club, or those sorts of stories that are just much broader than the sport, the human story, the human touch, because the newspapers and the media love the human side to the sporting club.
Absolutely, absolutely. And the next point is fantastic as well. Reliving your club history.
Well, absolutely. I mean, the beautiful thing about club history is we get to tell the story over and over and over and again. And as an ex-player or a retired player, Joe, we tend to improve the stories a little bit over time. I'm a much better cricketer than I was when I was playing, that's for sure. But we tell the stories, you know, go back 50 years, 60 years, you might have premiership reunions or key milestones with the club. What was your club doing 20 years ago? What was it doing 50 years ago? Is a fantastic case study. So there's opportunities all the time. Like when players maybe reach a milestone in a senior career, they might 200 games or 200 competitions or whatever it is. Well, then go back into their playing past and get them to tell the stories of the people that they played with those 10, 15 years ago. But typically the history revolves around the history of the club and the reunions that we have and the milestones that we have. But we love to hear about them. We love to relive it and we love to hear it. And that's not just those involved in the club, Joe. That's just the community loves to be reminded of really positive times in the club and the community's time.
Yeah, and I think the point that you, or the example that you give, that you've jotted down here, the one about Anzac Day, is a very, very salient point. You know, if you have club members that served in the armed forces or in the defence forces, then Anzac Day is a great day to collect the photos and collect the sporting achievements of these people that participated in your club, and go to the local media with a story that revolves around those folks that gave so much to Australia and also to the club. I mean, that's something that would be very, very a great way to engage the local media.
Well, absolutely, because you're picking up on the Anzac Day theme, but giving a different angle to Anzac Day, to what particularly newspapers traditionally cover. So they're always looking for a different angle. So if we can create those different angles, history gives us that tremendous opportunity to do that.
All right, number eight, and we may have touched on this a little bit at the start, but
we did touch on it a little bit at the start, but I thought it was worth mentioning it twice because it is just so important. It is, going back to relationships with the reporters and the editors. Just because you ring a reporter once or an editor once or you had them at your club once, that does not mean that they've fallen in love with your club. That does not mean anything other than they know a little bit more than they did before. So what we really need to do as sports clubs is build a deep long-term relationship with those individuals, and that takes time. Well, most importantly, that takes time. You know, it takes our time to invest in actually ringing them and contacting them and touching base with them and sitting with them when we're at our functions or when they do make the effort to come to the games. It's not a short-term strategy, Joe, that we can just snap our fingers and we're going to have a really strong relationship with the media. It takes a lot of investment on our behalf and a lot of time, and that's something that often the club volunteers don't have a lot of. So
yeah, extrapolating out that relationship point, I think keep in mind that nearly all journos, male or female, are frustrated sports champions. So, you know, They weren't able to cut it so much.
Sometimes they weren't able to. A lot of our local sports journalists in the Morning
Peninsula so they
turn are outstanding
to,
sports
absolutely. They turn to subscribing or being on radio or whatnot, including...
I think you're just talking ourselves, Joe, but generally a lot of the journalists are very good
value. So the point I'm trying to make is that I know a lot of clubs that will invite journos or invite the media folks to come in and play in their Masters teams or play in special tournaments or
celebrity games.
Celebrity games, yep. Or these kind of events. What that does, of course, is it establishes a bond with the person, and more likely to receive your phone call. Now, that, as simplistic as that sounds, it's just the truth out there in the world that networks are everything. So that's the point here with relationships. Now, number nine,
Joe, is when you can't get what you want to get, you just got to find a different route. And in today's day and age, where if we all want to, we can all be journalists. That's what we're suggesting. If you're not getting your story out into the media, well, then create your stories and publish them yourself. So, and that's as simple as grabbing an iPhone and running around the different members within your club and recording either a video recording of an interview with a coach or a player or a volunteer for that day, or a voice recording, and then putting it up on your club website and putting it up so then you can use it in your social media, on the club YouTube, on Facebook. And if you do that consistently... then you will develop your own audience that in some instances and for some clubs is even bigger than the audience of the newspapers and radio stations they're trying to get into. So, Joe, there are our nine tips of how you can get your club in the local media.